Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome to another Rahalastapa Book Club. This week we are looking at and reading Ashes to Admin by Evie King. And I'm joined by Evie King, if that is your real name.
Hello. You all right?
Yes, I'm very good. It isn't her real name, but so hopefully I won't call her by her real name during the interview. I'll cross it out. I wrote it down, but oh, that's a good start. So I do know Evie in real life,
yeah.
She works under a pseudonym because what she does is so secret that no one must ever
know.
Must ever know. How are you, Evie?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Thanks for having me on. This is amazing.
It is my pleasure. I read your book last year and I've reread it and just finished reading it about half an hour ago.
Wow.
So I'm very excited. So I'm right.
Fresh in your mind.
Right up on it. It's pretty fresh in my mind. It's a fantastic book. Now, why don't you tell us what it is about? Because you'll describe it better than I do.
I will try. So it's about my job, which is carrying out Section 46, which to everyone else is sort of council assisted funerals. So when you don't have next of kin or you don't have any cash, you can go to your council where the person died, because that's the important part. It's not where you lived, it's where you died. And then they can sort you out a funeral without you having to pay for it and have all the stress of it. And that's what I do sort of in between other random things like alcohol licensing and taking complaints about dog poo. It's sort of a really weird,
right.
Boring and then really interesting job, like then in degrees. Depends who's ringing up.
Well, it's all quite interesting. So it is council work. How did you end up getting this job? Was this something you'd aspired to be? Did it fall in your lap?
Basically fell in my lap. I mean, I'd never aspired to be anything particularly. I've always bounced around different things, as you know. I've done all sorts of things, all sorts of day jobs, public sector, private sector, third sector, and writing and stand-up and all sorts of odds and ends to keep myself amused. And I decided to leave London because I had quite a stressful job and I'd had enough of the commuting and ended up in a seaside town. And ended up with the only show in town, which was the council. There weren't many jobs there. And my job initially was administration, just taking the calls and doing forms and things, which is the kind of relaxing job I wanted when I left London. And then my manager asked me to help with some guidance for these funerals that someone else had been working on, but they wanted a fresh pair of eyes who didn't know anything about it. So I read through it and I helped to make sort of it make sense to people who'd not read it before. And then I did some research on web because there's government guidance as well to incorporate into it. And then they said, would you like to practice the guidance? And that's when I got sent to someone's house who died many weeks earlier and actually got involved and found that I had, in air quotes, talent for finding out stuff about people and you know, looking through things and getting the best clues. And yeah, so I got a sort of taste for the job and my manager ended up giving it to me solely to look after. It's a complete twist of fate.
I think what's interesting, it just happened to, you know, it wasn't a plan.
No.
And I think what's really interesting about the book and why it's a great, and it really is a fantastic book. And you've had some amazing quotes already.
Them from you. Thank you.
Is that one of the myths from me? You know, it's a job that people won't realise exists for a start, and then it's being done by someone who does it much better than they are required to do it. I mean, maybe does it as well as it should be done, but most people would probably do this job and not care very much. But you get very kind of emotional. Well, you get not emotionally, though sometimes emotionally, but you get very involved in wanting to do this job as well as possible so that the people who have died, often in unfortunate circumstances, obviously, or they wouldn't be coming to the council, you know, get the kind of afterlife care that they deserve. It's kind of fascinating. And that you're a fantastic writer as well. So all these things combined to mean this, you know, this job could easily have gone unremarked. But equally, what I love about the book is that it's your unsurprisingly, as it's a biography, an autobiography of your job, you are very much the central character of it, and it does sort of revolve around you, and it is this rare thing. I mean, it must be quite rare. You're kind of within the business of this. You are sort of fated as being someone who's very good at it. I think most people would just go, yeah, all right, stick them in the ground. Ashes to ashes, ashes to ashes, funk to funky, and then that's the end of it.
It can be due to just so much other stuff being on your desk and the resources being so low and getting lower all the time. Obviously, we're getting cut councils. So I can well understand someone. Also, different councils have different levels. I'm in quite a privileged position to be in a council which serves an area that is like everywhere. It's got deprivation, pockets of deprivation, but it's generally a well-off area and generally the family units are all intact. But in somewhere like Birmingham City Council, you'd be spending £1 million a year on these funerals, compared to my sort of 30 grand or 50 grand. So I can maybe concentrate a bit more on the individual. But even so, when I, like today, I had two come in at the same time. So even then I try and keep everyone, you know, with the best attention and attention to detail I can, because it's so easy to lose, a really important thing if you're just doing it perfunctorily and quickly. Like the other week, I got given someone who, to all intents and purposes, had nobody. It looked like they had nobody. Everyone who knew them at their sheltered accommodation said they had nobody. They put their next of kin down as a guy they knew from the hairdressers. So they themselves sort of had inferred through that they knew nobody. But I went on a Facebook group for that area of town and just said, does anyone know this guy? And someone sent me a link to a post from a year before where one of their relatives was saying, I've lost touch with this person. Does anyone know where they are? And unfortunately, I had to say where they were, which was the mortuary. But at least I found that family member, and they were able to, even though they were, you know, estranged and it was difficult, they were able to just draw a line under that relationship and not live, not knowing if they were alive or dead or where they'd gone, what happened to them.
Yeah. And so, you know, each, you go through a few of your cases, and, you know, and it's bookended, the book is bookended by the story of, you know, a very mysterious death that we, that is a woman who's found sort of basically naked and in the sea, and nobody could identify her. But even in the, which is, you know, but is an amazing story, and the, you know, I don't want to ruin it, so we won't talk about it too much. But every single one is you trying to piece, for a lot of them is trying to piece together these clues. It felt to me very much like, you know, this is a TV drama. It's a brilliant idea for a TV drama because it's, you know, because it is, each episode is a case, and, you know, you're piecing together clues, and then you've got the similar cut, you've got the same cast of the people working in the office, but you know, each week is a different death. So it has this, there's this detective element to it of trying to piece together someone's life after they've died. which, you know, I think is, you sort of, in, you know, you enjoy the job because it's emotionally and spiritually fulfilling, even if you're doing a lot of overtime, I have to say. So you're working on this job, it's a bit like being a comedian, which you know about anyway, but you're sort of never really off the clock when you're a comedian. But it, you know, you are working part time, but putting a lot of your own effort into this, and it's become a big part of your life, which we'll talk about a bit more later. But it's really fascinating because we get these glimpses, as you do, into the lives of strangers and people you would never meet. I think what's interesting is, I think people would have preconceptions about the kind of person who would need a service you know, you've got no money and therefore you know someone's going to make a few. Hey, it's great to know that you know the council will make an effort to sort you out if you're unfortunate enough for that to happen to you. But there's a massive variety of people. It's not just homeless people or you know extremely poor people. Really, it's all kinds of people who you encounter without ever obviously meeting them.
You can have a million in the bank, but you know you've lost touch with everyone, or you've outlived everyone. You've been 99, and it's no judgment on you. It's not that you had no friends. It's just all your friends are dead, and it's timing and circumstances. And it's like if your husband or wife predeceased you, you're the one who's on your own. But you did have a relationship, and you wouldn't have been that person if you'd died first. And it's all timing and situation. And no judgment on the people at all. And nowadays, given how expensive funerals are, and how the cost of living is going up, and you know people can't put things by for a really expensive funeral. It's creeping up. The numbers are creeping up.
Right.
It's not just very poor people who can't afford a funeral. I'd say I'd struggle to grab up $4,000 overnight if I had to.
Yeah. Yes, it's true. So you know, it is, and it, you know, it's great that you go that extra mile to try and find, as you've just explained there, that you try to find people who will just attend the funeral, or you want to find out something, which you managed to do for, you know, everyone apart from this mystery, but this mystery body, you managed to find some personal detail, and you do very well in even with the completely mysterious one, but you know that you find something that the funeral can revolve around, or people who will come to the funeral. So it's a lovely example of humanity coming together. Often the community comes together on a funeral, and often you find someone who seems to be friendless, has lots of friends or lots of acquaintances who want to be at the funeral. So you know, it's a fascinating book in terms of you know, exploring a subject that we don't like to talk about, which is our own death. No one likes to think about it. That's why we have no plans for our own funeral, because you don't want to think, oh, well, let's sort out what that's going to be.
Tempting fate if I do that.
So, you know, and it is a very philosophical book. I mean, you start, that you're obviously, you talk a bit about, I mean, I've always been a bit obsessed with death since I was a kid.
Same.
Which I think probably most people, once you find out about it. But yeah, you were pretty obsessed as a child, or at least with the. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
When you said about, was it, you know, something you planned? It's not something I planned, but it's clearly something that's always meeting me, you know, during my life. And it sort of feels like I've ended up where I should be, because just I was always I know children generally are very interested in death, you know, they always talk about you know, when they're playing with you, how they're cutting your head off or killing you or disemboweling you. So they're obsessed with death, and all they watch is cartoon characters being squashed flat and video game characters being exploded. So it's there, but it's cartoon death, and the real stuff doesn't touch them until their bunny dies or their granny dies, and gradually you realise, you know, eventually I'm going to die. And but I was particularly interested in the macabre, and you know, I'd always walk past this funeral home on the way to the primary school and say to my mum, do you know they put lipstick on dead people in there? I'm just the kind of more interested than I should be. And I did say for many years that I wanted to be a funeral director or a mortician or a coroner, until I lost interest and wanted to be a truck driver because of long distance Clara in Pigeon Street. So my child brain took me away from all that. But it's a hard industry to sort of get into, because you have to really want to do it, don't you? And I didn't obviously want it that much, but to do it in a kind of like this way, where I don't have to have a special qualification to, you know, do something or have a scientific knowledge or anything like that, I can just be involved on the human level. And having been through so many different situations in my life, because my mum was saying, you always seem to know someone, like I'll say, oh, I know a guy who does that, it's because I've been through all these different jobs and things and circles of people. And it sort of helps grow your experience. So it's a good job to end up in when you're experienced enough in life to deal with all the different types of people I have to deal with and have all the conversations I have to have. I don't think 28-year-old me could have had the conversations I've had with people, having to pick up a mobile phone in an evidence bag and turn it on and see if I can dial some numbers and tell someone who picks up that, do you know this person? They've died. You know, it's a really weird sort of, you have to be really open with people. And, the death obsession, and I don't fear it as well. I'm fascinated with it, and I kind of, you know, I don't have any problem with it at all. It'll be a lovely long rest, you know. You know when you go to bed at the end of the night and you're just so happy to go to bed? I feel like that will be times a million of the long lie-in. So I can work with it without any anxiety or fear or...
Yeah. I know that exactly, because with my operation a couple of years ago, when I went under, I thought, you know, obviously lovely, it's to die. If you're on morphine, it's quite a nice time to die, I guess, which if you're lucky enough to be, you are. But I just sort of drifted away, and I kind of thought, you know, then woke up. But there was nothing there, and I kind of thought, that's not that, you know, if that had been the end, it wouldn't have been
a trauma.
It was a lovely kind of peaceful end, and then I wasn't there, and that's sort of what I was expecting. Yeah. And
you wouldn't know about it. You're too dead to know about it.
Exactly. So I think it's interesting to think about death as much as this book does, because it's one of those subjects we don't generally talk about. And I suppose that, you know, that the job is such a unique combination of characteristics required to do it really well, which you have. Is the understanding to be able to talk to each other, to a stranger about someone that you've got to find out how they know them before, sometimes is the first thing, but being able to be empathetic and sympathetic. But equally, I mean, it's quite you're not going in and removing the body, but you're going in and clearing up you're going through the houses and trying to look for evidence and trying to find, you know, their wills and all that sort of stuff. But there's a lot of disgusting stuff to deal with, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if someone's been very ill in their last weeks and they haven't been able to get to the bathroom, you'll have buckets and washing up bowls of excrement. You'll have sick. You'll have, obviously, if the person's lain there for a while, you'll have the evidence of that. And some things, like, I don't know why, the freezer had been turned off in one house and it was full of meat. And I had to, we have to clear out the food, because part of the job is it's under the Public Health Act. So. Yes. The dealing with the funeral is part of that Public Health Act. It's really cold, hard legislation that says if you're not being dealt with, you're a public health risk. But the other public health risk is the food in the house. So we have to take that out of the fridge, take any perishables out, put them in the bin, take the bin out. And someone had turned the freezer off many, many weeks before. And opening this fridge door, and you know when you get blood in the bottom of a beef or chicken tray, this whole freezer was just full of blood and just flowed out onto the floor, down the wall, and the stench. And it's just, you have to really get your hands dirty for the whole morning, emptying this house of things and clearing things up and getting rid of maggots and letting the flies out the window. And then you have to go back to your desk and do the admin and the paperwork. It's like a really strange gear change. And then you have to do the human bit of making the calls and finding the connection with the human that, you know, they still are. We don't call them a body. We don't, you know, talk about them in past tense. I'll phone my funeral director and go, have you got David? Has he arrived? You know, because they talk about taking them into our care, which is how we phrase it, so that people are assured that we're not handling them like, you know, coldly and without any humanity. We do talk about them as people, and we do go through the referral form, sort of sheds light on who they are anyway, even before you've done any of your investigation. It'll be, you know, you'll speak to the care home manager and you'll say marital status, because that's needed for the death certificate. And they'll go, oh, married for a week, never talked about it. So you get all these stories that come out from just one question about their situation for the death certificate. And yeah, so it's all this gauntlet of things, from the disgusting to the wonderful. And you just have to change gear for each one, and just sitting listening to endless hold music. That's actually the worst part of the job, actually. There's hold music that I have to hear for hours from EDF and HSBC and all the other people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
There's obviously lots about the nature of death and the surprising nature of death. I like it when you talk about no one knows when they're going to die, obviously, and there's a time when you're driving past the house of a guy that you've got his ashes in the back of your car. Or in the boot of your car, or in the footwell of your car. And it's just like thinking, that would be weird for him to realise that, like, in 2 weeks' time, he'll be dead and then in someone else's car. So it's sort of weird weird to think about your own death, but equally it's for you as well. It's this way that their lives impact on your life, and your life impacts on the life of everyone who knows the dead person. It's this weird, you know...
Yeah, it's more about life than death, I think, as I say at one point, because you're picking up the pieces of someone having died, but you have to find out how their life went in order to find their friends and family and learn a bit more about them, just for the practicality of their eulogy. We don't want this eulogy that sort of can't do them any justice at all. Mike Celebrant said to me on our first ever funeral together, oh, that's a lot more information than I'm used to. Last week, I just had to say, we think he liked football. And that's just, there's almost no point doing that. It's almost worse than just doing a generic service and leaving that out. So, it ends up being very life-affirming, because you find out they were really interesting, or they did things. Well, everyone's interesting. Everyone's got a story. And then you find out the people behind them, and you get to know them. And they sort of end up following you on Twitter and staying in your life. But I'm still following the railway club, the two model railways, and they sometimes tweet at me from an old case. So it just ends up building your own life up as well, as you go. You sort of collect people like Pokemon, like death Pokemon.
and it's also interesting that, of course, whilst some of the stories are quite life affirming and the people lived kind of amazing lives, that maybe something went wrong with while they're sort of on their own, that there are people who've obviously cut themselves off from everyone and then have died very lonely, and there are people who may have done very bad things that you still have to treat the same as you would with anyone else.
You do. I mean, there's going to be several categories of people, millions of categories, but the main ones are going to be those who outlived people and don't have anyone around, those who deliberately shirked people and said, I don't want anything to do with the world, those who have done very wrong things and made themselves socially unacceptable, and that they will mingle in and out. And then you just get the people who just don't have the means, their family just don't have the means. So that's a very wide category, because that's lots of different people. It's not a specific personality type. That's just life. Yeah. Money goes all one way in this country at the moment, and it's up. So you get a very wide variety of people in that category. But yeah, you do sometimes get people that perhaps no one wants to do their funeral for good reason. But they're dead now, so you just have to treat them like everyone else and do what you can. And there'll still be some people that like them, you know.
The paedophiles are like...
There'll be other dodgy people who they hung out with who will go. So everyone's got friends, even the worst of types of people will have friends. And you just have to, it's a job. And that's how I try and balance it out. Because as you said, the emotional involvement can take a toll, you know, and you do need, if you're going to do this as a job, to walk that line of, I can't just leave at 5 o'clock, someone's died, and that's a big deal. And that for their family, that would be a big deal. So I need to do this on my day off to find their family quickly so that they don't have more trauma and not knowing about that death. But, you know, some people find out 2-3 weeks later because the coroner's had the person, and that can really traumatize them. So you want that sort of balance of not calling it, well, it's 5 o'clock, I'm going home, I don't care, I'll deal with it on Monday, but also not going too far into that life and that person that you lose something of yourself and you get too involved and invested and subsumed. And so I sort of take that Mary Poppins view of, I'm there for the children for the duration of the case and I really care about them visibly, but I fly off my umbrella at the end and they're all out and angry with me, like, how could you let us go? I have another body. So it's just that it's taken me a while, but I'm getting quite good at the balancing act of turning myself on and off, bits of myself compartmentalizing, you know.
I do. And it's, you know, it is fascinating. And you're a pretty rational person, and you're someone who has been sort of interested in ghost hunting as an ironic haunted houses to sort of giggle with your friends about how crazy it is. But within this book, and I don't think you've started believing in ghosts, but your brain is spots kind of coincidences and little, it feels like little signs from the dead person, and you start talking to the dead people as you go. So you say in the book, strange, I have a job where I effectively collect ghosts, but as it goes on, it feels like you have a relationship with these people that you've never met, and so you are talking to them and you are dealing with them and you are spotting supernatural or things that feel like a sign that you've done the right thing or the wrong thing.
Yeah, I suppose that is what legacy is, isn't it? It's hanging around after you've gone and people are being reminded of you, and it's not necessarily a physical thing. It's the footprint you leave. And I suppose because I'm getting to know them after they've died, that's all I know of them. And so I'm sort of chatting away to them as I find stuff in their house and go, oh, I like that album. Oh, yeah, cool. And things like that. And sort of becoming buddies with them. But when there's no one to answer back, so I fill in the conversation. It's like ultimate Louis Theroux-ing, you know, they stay quiet and I do all the talking. And I suppose, I don't know, it's the weirdest one-sided relationship, and it's a good relationship for me because I'm quite an odd person anyway, and I get very nervous in social situations. I suppose like you with stand-up, where you'll say, I'm much more comfortable talking to a silent audience who can't answer back. I'm the same. When I did stand-up, it was nice to be in a controlled social situation. afterwards in the bar was when it would be like, oh God, people are going to speak to me and I'm going to have to say something. And it, oh no. But same with this. I don't have to have that close relationship, but I do have that close relationship with the safety of them not really being around anymore. And also not being real anymore, because people are quite, like, when I'm out getting my lunch that day, there'll be loads of people in Sainsbury's who annoy me. I'm just like, oh, idiot. Which is probably what I would have been saying about them a week ago if they've crossed my path in Sainsbury's and, like, put their trolley across my path. So now they're idealised by death. You know, they've gone. They can't ever be wrong again or annoying again. And, yeah, I can just purely, interact on that level.
Your influence, so someone's life will influence you. It sort of does really show that people you've never met, as a result of looking at their lives, you will learn something, or something will chime with you that will affect your life. And even though you've never met in life, that person's life has still affected yours, which is true, I suppose, of all our lives. You know, there's loads of people who affect our lives without us even knowing who they are.
Or famous people.
Lots of people whose lives we've affected and we'll never, none of these people will know what you've done with their lives or how they've helped you. So, it is this beautiful idea of the circle of life that death is inevitable and we should accept it. I was thinking today...
It is the most unifying thing, isn't it?
It is.
We'll all do it.
And it's sort of, we'll all die. I was thinking today, like, as we're recording this, the story of the guy who tried to kill the Queen with the crossbow in December 2021 came out. You kind of think, you idiot, she was going to die anyway. She was only going to live for another year and now you're going to go to prison. Murderers should realise it's everyone's going to die.
Bide your time.
Just wait it out. Especially if you've got a beef with someone who's 96, just fucking wait it out, because they're not going to be there for very long. So don't go to prison for life as a result of it. You didn't even kill her.
What a waste.
What a terrible waste of...
Well, we were saying this the other day about Bags for Life. We were going, because I cruelly... when your brain says something and you go, naughty brain? I walked past an old lady who had a bag for life and I was like, should have just got a normal bag. Because as you get older, you realise I've only got two more, flats in me or houses in me. Or, you know what I mean? You suddenly feel that kind of closing in.
Well, look, it's we'll talk a bit about how you got the book published and all this sort of stuff in a sec. But I just want to say there's so much in this. I know you've made Stuart Lee cry, which is always a good thing in my opinion. and Stuart's put it as his top book of the year, even though he read it last year, so he's put it as his top book
before it was even out. It was the top book of 2022.
So there's a lot of wisdom in there, and there's a lot of humanity in there, and I think it's worth thinking about these things. I mean, you're very prepared for your own death. It's worth having all your documents in an easy to find place.
Put them all in a folder, please.
Save someone having to kind of knock cupboards back and find something in the freezer or whatever they're going to do. So how did the point of view, you've obviously written before and you were a comedian and you've had various bits and pieces in magazines and stuff like that. But how did you come to, A, realise this was a book? Did someone approach you? Did you come up with the idea of making a book? And how did that come to be published?
So that big case I had of the unidentified person, there was a lot of media interest in that. The main reason I publicised it was to, A, get some attendees to the funeral, but also put out feelers to anyone who might have known who they were. But then, obviously, the media found it quite a sort of human interest story as it is. And I was asked if this publisher could write a book about my story, and I said, well, actually I've been writing a sort of diary, sort of notes of cases, and every time I attend a sort of social gathering and people sort of do the traditional, so what do you do, I would say what I did, and people would go, I'm interested in that, you should write a book about that. And so the writer in me was starting to think, maybe I should. But I never dreamed to write a book, because how do you write a book? I don't even know how I've written a book. I've written a book. I know I have, because there's a book. But I don't know how I did that, because, well, it's baby steps, isn't it? You just sort of write chapters and then it grows. But if you asked me to write another book tomorrow, I'd be like, oh, I don't know how to do that. No, sorry. But what happened is, as in life, like with all these things, the chances and just luck, a friend of mine who's quite a sort of a well-known writer in TV, and he just randomly approached an agent for me, even though I wasn't really writing anything. I was just putting notes down. And he said, in an email, meet you. You need to talk. This person's got a book in them. And I didn't think they'd ever want to meet me because I didn't even have a book to show them, but they did. They invited me to their office and I talked them through a few cases and read a few sort of snippets of what I'd written about them. And they were like, yeah, write it and come back.
Yeah.
So I just sat up after work late into the night, sort of would write between midnight and 5 a.m. And just built and built, because I had to Google how long's a book. It's pathetic. How long's a chapter? And then I'd stick my word counter on, and when I hit the amount of words for a chapter, I'd go, right, that's how long that needs to be, and I'd refine it down if I garbled loads, or I'd have to build it up big time if I hadn't managed to report enough stuff. And then I sort of wrote it in order, luckily, so I didn't have to worry about the kind of things that... So I don't know how people write novels, you know. They have these boards, don't they, almost like a CSI murder board where they have to have their plot line and they have to remember things.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's all factual, so I don't have to remember a plot line or that person's... No, they wouldn't have been there. So I've got all of that done for me. I just have to report what I've done and what I've seen and just put it in a format.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something I ever thought I would do. I genuinely just never thought that would become a book. And it was just for the fact that someone else thought it could be. And then an agent had faith in me, and that someone at the publisher who I eventually now went to was waiting for me as well to say, well, we'll publish it if you do write it. And it all came together. It did fall off a bit during the COVID years, and I had to repitch it to another agent because my agent couldn't do it anymore, and no one wanted it because they were like, no one wants to read about death.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's a shame because it's a massive thing that will happen, but and I don't believe you because everyone I speak to goes, I'd read that.
Yeah.
And they're not humoring me, their eyes go wide because they like true crime, they like murder, they like zombies. I mean, you know, you turn on the TV, there'll be someone getting killed. And so I knew there was something in it. And then my original agent came back to me after COVID smoke cleared and it all came good.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And what I really like, you're very respectful, as you are, you obviously have to be in the job.
Yeah.
Though some professionals have not been as respectful as we're finding out in the news. But you're very respectful. Yes. Within the book. I presume you've changed names, but equally, you've changed your own name. But equally, like, there's a couple of bits where you go, I found something that would give away who this person is, or that is their secret that I don't want anyone to know.
Yeah.
Even within the mysterious case, you know, there's an element of you thinking maybe someone knows her, but you don't want to give away what it is because that might get that person in trouble, which is very nice. But how do you get that balance of, you know, how it's obviously quite hard to get that balance right you've given yourself a pseudonym. Is that part of the reason why you're not using your own name for writing this book?
Yeah, I feel like it'll be the easiest thing in the world for people to do some Googling and find out who I really am. But that wouldn't be a problem because, as you say, I haven't disrespected anyone. I haven't really overstepped my bounds. And also, as you'll remember from the book, fun fact, dead people have no GDPR because we're not a person anymore in terms of legally.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need a bank account. We don't need any of that rubbish. We're free. We're gone. So there isn't legally any problem with recalling the story about someone who's died. Although I had that feeling, you know, of, is it problematic? Is it disrespectful? I don't want to, you know, get attention or notoriety or money on the back of someone else's stories and misfortune. But ultimately, because I was writing it through a prism of trying to, A, show that these people were really interesting people and great people, and that all these people whose first impulse is to say, oh, how sad, oh, that's really tragic, is actually, no, it's unfortunate, but they're not tragic. Like, they've travelled the world, they've done this, they've done that, you know, don't pity them. They're absolutely not in need of pity. So I was trying to present it positively for them, and I was trying to get everyone to feel less stressed about legacy and funerals being so important, you know, that there's this big deal about having this kind of funeral, like, you failed at life. You know, I'm trying to make it all positive, that it's not a scorecard, it is not your final exam, your funeral, you're just in a box and a bunch of people are talking about you, and you've wasted your whole life stressing about your eulogy that you'll never hear, making sure that you took that promotion and made sure you got married and had two kids because you felt like that would sound good in a eulogy, and I don't want to be, you know, it's a failure in life. All these things that we worry about, and we live life in fear, not quite of death, because death's not a problem. Death's just going to turn the lights off and you won't know. But fear of the end and how we're going to be looked at the end and how we're going to be judged at the end and how many people are going to come to our funeral and cry and look sad. And just trying to take the pressure off of that. And so I wanted this just nice book about a subject that sounds horrible, death and funerals, but dignifies the people and gives them their last chance to be known again. And that takes the sting out of death. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing, like a cake or a hat stand. It's just there. And so just, and I thought hopefully the point of view that I'm taking means that it's not running the risk of being seen as prurient or gossipy or disrespectful. You know what I mean? I mean, some people might take that view. You go on Twitter every day, you can't say anything. I was just saying this morning to someone, I keep getting recommended sausage skins by Amazon on Instagram ads. And I said, I was about to tweet, why do I keep getting recommended sausage skins? But then I just know that people will go, well, some people make sausages, and actually my dad made sausages, and that's how he died. So you don't want to, you never know what people are going to get offended by. So all I can say is, in my defense, I absolutely come at this book with love for my people and I'm wanting to make everyone feel better about the end, and just a sort of unifying book, and a sort of, we're all sort of the same, we're all going the same direction. Time's the only measure, as Tom Stoppard said.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that's how it comes across. And I think there's a lady who writes poetry, and you've published some of her poetry in the book, and that was one of her ambitions to get published, which is just lovely. So, you know, I think it's, as you say, it's very much about life, and it's not real. I mean, it's about death because people have to die for this to work, but it's about their life, and it's about your life. You know, it's so much about you. I just think it's such a clever book and such a heartfelt book no sort of artifice there. I mean, you'll occasionally make little asides about the process of writing, so you're an open book, and this should
open
be
this
should be an open book too, but with people reading it
with best but, eyes on it.
So it's really great. I heartily recommend it to everyone. Do read it. You will enjoy it. You'll learn stuff. You'll think about stuff. There's so much in there, and I'm sure it's going to be a huge success, and I'm sure it will be a crime drama. Who would you like to play you in the TV film version of this? Have you got any ideas?
You know, once Radio 4 covered one of my cases, and Grace Dent did the voiceover, and she said, she described me, and she said my age and how I looked. And she said, if this was a TV drama, she'd be played by Anna.
Right, okay.
Which I think is a good shout, actually.
Okay. Get Anna Freelin.
She's solid.
I can play the dead pedo. That's my that's my speciality in acting. It'd be an easy job. So it's, you know, not even the bodies don't even make
it. Just turn up.
I ask everyone, is there an audiobook of this coming out, by the way?
I don't know. There isn't yet, anyway. I don't know if there's any call for it. At the moment, there's ebook and paperback. Cool. So them's your choices.
It's a good read.
And if there was, I'd like to do it.
Okay, yeah, I think you should definitely do it if there is one. Or Anna Friel, if you get Anna Friel to do it, that'd be excellent as well. are you a big reader? Are you reading anything at the moment that you'd like to recommend?
At the moment, I've got an absolute pile of books at the moment, but the one I just got done reading is called, it's so cliche what I'm reading, it's called Stiff by Mary Roach. Okay. And it's about cadavers.
Right.
And it's similar to what I want. It's a subject that most people would probably, you know, veer away from, but actually she makes it so funny and so interesting. And it's all about medical science, what happens to you if you go to medical science, and all sorts of different chapters on what happens to you after you die if you're doing something interesting with you. Because I've just donated my body to medical science for when I die. So I'm hoping they do something fun with me, like in the book. I hope I'm one of the people they shoot with a testing ammo and testing.
Oh, wow. Wow,
yeah, bulletproof vests.
That would be good. And have you got a plan for another? I know you've done lots of jobs, and I know there's stuff in there that I think would make another book. Are you planning another book?
My previous job probably would fill the volumes. I'm sort of seeing how this one is received. I know my agent is sort of keen for me to write again.
Yeah.
And I feel like once I've got something I can write about, I can write well. But like I said earlier about novelists, I look at them and think, how did you think of all that? Because I didn't have to think of all this. Once someone points me in a direction and says, write, I can do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to repeat this book because this trick is played. You know, the thing about this book is, like you said, most people don't know about this job. And that's the initial intrigue is, what? That happens? And then when they realise, of course that happens, it's so obvious, isn't it? Because you don't think about it because you've got a family. Yeah. And you think, well, yeah, my funeral will be dealt with. But then, yeah, when you do start thinking about that, of course it's a job. But so I can't repeat this trick. But I'm thinking if I do anything on the back of this, it might be aimed at children.
Okay.
I know there are children's books about death already out there, but I'll have a look at what they've tackled because there's always a different angle and there's always a new way of showing presenting. And I could get, the front cover is beautifully drawn, like, yes, with the ghost and me holding the hand. The person who drew that, David Rigby, I'd get him to draw the drawings, and it could be a sort of a lot easier to write as well, Rich, big wink. Less words, more pictures.
Yeah, more pictures.
But, yeah, sort of something not patronising, because I remember being a kid and I remember being patronised and I didn't like it. So I liked it when adults talk to me like other adults.
Sure.
So I'd try and use my same tone of voice and my same, you know, and like you and Stu, you never patronised your audience. I learned sort of words from you and I had to go away and look them up. You know, when you did the True Fables with the animals and anthropomorphisation, I got that from you guys.
Okay,
you know?
There you go. Well, good.
So I want to do that. I want to do that.
Good to know. Good to know that I, even though we never met, that something from my life. Oh, no, we haven't met. Look, it's a terrific, it's a terrific, it's a terrific book. Oh, I haven't met Evie King. It's a terrific book.
Who should?
It's called Ashes to Admin. It's by Evie King, if that is your real name. And but I highly recommend it. Thank you very much, Evie. And I've managed to call you Evie all the way through, I think. So, you know, I win as well.
Well done, Rich.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to have a pseudonym now as well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, thanks to Chris Evans and Ben Evans for all their work behind the scenes in keeping us going, especially with this one, which was a little bit traumatic.
Yes.
In terms of the tech.
Rather like death.
Yes.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.